Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, July looks a lot like June, at least when it comes to presidential fundraising numbers. Once again, despite the fact that President Obama spent about 98% of his time fundraising and the other 2% he spent on the golf course, we still see a huge fundraising advantage for Mitt Romney. We've seen this pretty much in the wake of certainly him officially securing the nomination, and the numbers really began to change when he became the de facto nominee back in April. Once again, we see that Romney wins by about $26 million in the fundraising haul. We've also seen over the weekend that Obama has spent about $400 million already. So this is looking pretty good for Mitt Romney if he can just make sure that money's spent on the right message over the next couple months.
Yep. Now, of course, Greg, we should put in all the appropriate caveats that, you know, spending more money doesn't automatically mean you're going to win the presidency. It depends on what you do with that money. And to be honest, I don't think whoever loses, whether it's President Obama or Mitt Romney, they're not really going to lose because they didn't have enough money. I think we can kind of toss that notion out of there. However, getting into October, you know, every campaign finds themselves needing to triage, needing to prioritize which states are need to have and which states are nice to have. Campaigns stop spending money in their nice to have states. The RNC and the Romney campaign together have about $185 million cash on hand. I don't know if we have the cash on hand numbers for the Obama campaign and DNC together, but that is a fairly healthy advantage there. And particularly as you look at the fundraising for both sides, both of them are down a bit from June. But the bottom line is that, you know, this is what happens when you pluck all of the low-hanging fruit. You've maxed out all of your easiest donors, and now you're looking for the folks who may be a little less enthusiastic supporters of the president or Governor Romney. You'd probably like to see this gap widen more. That's not even getting into the 527 groups and the super PACs and all that stuff. So Romney will probably and the RNC will probably have the financial resources they need, not just for television advertising, but also for organizing, you know, grassroots, for setting up your campaign operations, making sure you got enough branch offices in all the swing states and stuff like that. No one should, you know, count their chickens before they hatch or suggest this means the race is over. It just means that financially, Romney's probably going to have what he needs. I want to look at Stu Stevens running the Romney campaign and Reince Priebus over at the RNC and say, gentlemen, I know the whole mentality of don't fire until you see the whites of your eyes, but what are you waiting for? You know, I guess the idea is they are going to unleash a shock and awe campaign of organizing and advertising and all these things after Labor Day with the conventions. And I think that's, you know, that's when you want to spend your money. The old saying it was Yogi Berra in baseball, said it gets late early out there. We are getting a little later in the campaign than we might actually think we are. We're just probably about 3 weeks away from the conventions, and at that point, this race will be fully joined. And it looks like Romney will have the resources he needs, and now the question is, what do they do with it?
On to martini number two now, Jim, and that's the bad martini, of course. Wasn't that long ago that you and I were talking about sky-high gas prices, at least $4 a gallon, and some urban areas up to $5 a gallon. Then it came down to the point where it didn't become a major issue, but it never got anywhere close to $3 a gallon. Now, according to AAA, 24-cent rise over the past 4 weeks, up to $3.60 a gallon. Yes, there are political implications that probably aren't great for most incumbents. But Jim, we've detailed and pointed out over and over and over again, this economy is no good. And when you add gas prices like this into the mix, it just makes things even worse.
If Americans had just too much disposable income, this would not be a problem. But as we all know, in this economy, 8% unemployment, 25 million either looking for work or underemployed, and stagnant wage growth, et cetera. Yes, we are in a tough economy, and having to spend anywhere from $3.50 to $4 a gallon is, you know, one more punch to the American consumer. It was interesting. During the run-up in the spring, folks like me were saying, look, this is going to be a big issue. This is just going to exacerbate existing economic anxiety and worries. And dipped down a little bit, I used to hear from the Obama defenders saying, oh, why aren't you giving Obama credit? You know, it's down an entire nickel in the past week. Yada, yada. It came down from the neighborhood of about $4 a gallon to about $3.50 a gallon. Now, Greg, it's strictly coincidental that this is our bad martini because I filled up my tank this morning. But I mean, look, if you know, most Americans have a certain, you know, level of what they are comfortable paying for gas. And I don't think $3.50 a gallon is a comfortable level. I think that is a slightly less painful than filling it up. And this is even with people driving slightly more fuel-efficient cars the other day. By the way, right before we started taping this on NPR, I heard somebody lamenting how small the federal gas tax was, how terribly underfunded our infrastructure budget is, and how dreadful it is. It's been so long since it's been raised, and there was this left-of-center commentator on NPR was saying how awful it was that Americans were driving more fuel-efficient cars, so they were paying less in gasoline taxes, so we were underfunding our infrastructure. Thus, all of the fuel-efficient cars that, you know, we've been berated that we have to drive, now commentators are saying it's a terrible thing. You're hurting America by not purchasing a gas guzzler. Just one more further example of how the left is never satisfied with any of the choices you're making. Well, good news, it's back up to $4 a gallon. Now, what this actually means is that people will purchase less gas because they can't afford it. They will drive less if they can avoid it. Fewer Americans taking summer vacations, even though they've only got about a month left of summer left. But this is, you know, just one more, like I said, you know, fiscal gut punch that American families just do not need. And this is a major pressing weight upon the chests of the American consumer, is the fact that not only are they paying more for gas, every product that reaches them that has to be shipped by truck ends up costing more as well.
Jim, I know you're old enough to remember this. 1993, Clinton pushes his big tax hike. The gas tax hike was a tie vote in the Senate. Vice President Al Gore broke the tie, and that was so popular back then. It was just one of the many contributing factors to the Republican Revolution in 1994. So Democrats, I think this is a great election year issue. Please tell the American people you want them to pay more at the pump. Listen to the guy at NPR. I think that would be a fantastic fall campaign issue for us to debate. Don't you, Jim?
I would say go for it. By the way, I saw a very useful indicator of how wildly gas prices have changed. There was a blogger who was talking about his favorite scene in the cinematic classic Die Hard. Greg, I'm sure you're familiar. Bruce Willis is John McClane,
yes,
fighting terrorists. And early in the movie, he's driving past a gas station, and you can see it's 80 cents a gallon, Greg.
Right.
That's a 1988 movie. Can you imagine 80? I mean, even adjusting for inflation, less than a dollar a gallon just seems like science fiction utopia to the American consumer today. So, I mean, really, it's not that long ago in American life that gas was relatively cheap, and it was very inexpensive to move both yourself around and move goods and services around. And unsurprisingly, you know, as that gets more expensive, people can afford less of it, which hurts the economy.
And that was downtown Los Angeles. So you know that more rural areas, it was even cheaper than that. Great movie, Die Hard. On to martini number three now. And the crazy martini is related to David Plouffe. He is officially a senior White House advisor who's being paid by you and me to help run the president's campaign. He was officially the 2008 campaign manager. And after the election, he went into the private sector and made money, Jim. This is just unconscionable, the fact that the Obama folks are still talking to him. He accepted a $100,000 speaking fee in 2010 from an affiliate of a company doing business with Iran's government. This story is from The Washington Post today. A subsidiary of MTN Group, a South Africa-based telecommunications company, paid Plouffe for two speeches he made in Nigeria in December of 2010, about a month before he joined the White House staff. Since Plouffe's speeches, MTN Group has come under intensified scrutiny from U.S. authorities because of its activities in Iran and Syria, which are under international sanctions. There were no legal or ethical restrictions on Plouffe being paid to speak to the MTN subsidiary as a private citizen, but for a close Obama aide to have accepted payment from a company involved in Iran could prove troublesome. Now, the White House says that Plouffe checked with his lawyer, who said it was fine. Apparently, he didn't check very deeply. And, these things happen with these subsidiaries of companies. And the article points out that Bush administration officials have done this as well. So it's not the worst thing in the world, but it's certainly hypocritical.
It is. And here's the thing. I mean, apparently some are saying, aha, this is why the Obama administration is soft on Iran. Greg, the reason the Obama administration is soft on Iran is not because of a speech that David Plouffe gave in 2010. They're soft on Iran because they're soft on Iran, because that's the policy. President Obama does not have a gut-level loathing for the Iranian regime that I think a lot of Americans who know the history of that part of the world have. But the bigger deal with it was, so what should we make of this speech by David Plouffe? Two speeches, getting $50,000 per speech. Now, the campaign manager for President Obama is obviously a guy who's going to have a great deal of, you know, he's probably got some interesting stories to tell. Clearly a guy who's responsible for a successful endeavor in 2008. I don't know if he's the first guy I would go to talk to about what is technically mobile technology and digital communications, unquote, is the description of what the speech is about. Because when you think about it, besides the speaking fee of $100,000, they probably spent about $10,000 on airfare, and then more on lodging. You know, I'm just picturing the email of probably in all capital letters saying, I would like you to speak in Nigeria, and I'm willing to pay you $10,000. It sounds like one of those suspicious African, you know, help us transfer money out of our banks type emails. But yes. Anyway, the bottom line being, this is an enormous amount of money to send to a guy to talk about technology. And maybe he went and talked about technology, but I think those of us with slightly more cynical minds might say, wait a minute, is this really for a speech about technology, or is this basically buying a friend who's close to the president? This is essentially influence peddling. This is essentially, you know, lobbying without calling it lobbying. Maybe they really thought David Plouffe could help them figure out how to put up cell phone towers. Maybe they really think he's going to help their business in that way. Much more likely is that they want a friend in Washington. And it's one of those things where when you need something in Washington, it's nice to be able to call up somebody in the White House and say, hey, remember when we paid you $100,000 and gave you that free trip to Nigeria? That opens a lot of doors. That makes it creates a lot of sympathetic ears. This is explicitly what President Obama ran against in 2008. He ran ads on this. He said this is the same old game playing in Washington. And what the David Plouffe speech tells us is that deep down, Barack Obama doesn't really have any problem with it. Or he does have a problem with it when it's, say, Billy Tozen, the former Republican congressman who went on to become the head of the pharmaceutical lobby. He doesn't like it when his opponents do it. But when his former campaign manager does it, he has no problem whatsoever. I doubt you'll hear any comment from Obama. I doubt you'll hear any suggestion that there's anything wrong or improper by this. And deep down, Barack Obama doesn't care if his staffers go off and work for foreign companies making $100,000 a speech. He really doesn't care. He's okay with it because it's not about that at all. He's not upset. When he sees Republican influence peddling in Washington, his objection is not the influence peddling. His objection is that he and his friends aren't getting their cut. And that's, you know, tells you everything you really need to know about Barack Obama. That he never meant any of this stuff. I know, just words. He assured us it wasn't just words. But that's, you know, so this has been in a nutshell. I hope the Romney campaign is smart enough to realize the issue here is not really Iran. The issue here is that Obama is not the reformer he claimed to be in 2008. I think that's more useful for advancing the Romney campaign. Anyway, that's my rant du jour, Greg.
I would agree with that. And I wonder how disappointed the organizers were if they paid $100,000 and all Plouffe probably told them was, you know, we got a really big Twitter list and then we got people fired up. So thanks for the trip, everybody. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks so much for being with us today. And don't forget to join us again tomorrow for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.